Hi, I'm Matt Seibel, producer of the Fight Mixer Show. We have a good lineup of guests coming up next week. Take a look for yourself.
What's going on, fight fans? This is El Bandido of Leon Brito getting some work done out here on the field. Check out my interview with Fight Mixer on the 23rd. We're going to be talking about my upcoming BKFC fight on the 26th. It's coming up real soon, guys. I will see you there.
Hey, what's up, guys? It's your boy, Eric Anders, and I can't wait to join all you fight fans on the Fight Mixer podcast.
Of an abandoned training facility where we talk about fighting, training, and events. It's the Fight Mixer Show, where you can hear about all the local and world combat sports happenings. Get ready. It's time to gear up and square up because we're going live.
Live.
On the Fight Mixer Show.
What's going on? Mic check, 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 check. Prestige, world, wide, wide, wide. What's going on, everybody? Welcome to the show. I see you laughing, Matt. What's going on, man?
You're a funny guy.
That's our producer, one of the best in the business, baby. Taking it to the top. Right now, it's about 8:06. We are waiting for the rock stars to come in so we can interview them. And Matt got a plethora of stars here tonight. I mean, we got some of the biggest legends in the game. I mean, we got Bass Rutten, who I met him in PFL, believe it or not. Can you believe that, Matt?
That seems like the place to meet him.
Yeah, seriously. So, like, Bass Rutten is always going to – he's a lifer. He's always going to be involved in the sport. And he worked – he did commentating for the PFL. And I got to interview him when they did the open workouts. So they did open workouts, and then they did the fights at Madison Square Garden. And they did the weigh-ins there. And Bass Rutten, coolest cat in the litter box. I mean – and UFC Hall of Famer, former King of Pancras. You know, what hasn't he done? He also, you know, his career started in Pancras. He has a huge following in Japan, huge following. So I'm looking forward to talking to him about that. Also, some of his greatest fights. Like, you know, I grew up watching him. Like, he fought the Shamrock Brothers, which everyone knows Ken Shamrock because he wrestled in the WWE, but he also was a very, very good UFC fighter, if you don't recall. And his younger brother, Frank Shamrock, also fought him twice. And, you know, Osama, man, I can't remember his last name. Osama Shibuya, I can't pronounce it, but he had wars. Because back in the day, there was no YouTube. So there was, like, tape trading. Matt, you remember those days, right?
Where you had to, like,
yeah. Just before the tapes, so we got, you know, Pancras tapes all the time. We also got, like, UFC tapes and all that good stuff. So saw his wars and his battles in Japan and his heroics in Japan and his liver kicks, which still give me Vietnam flashbacks. So, you know, I can't wait to ask him about those battles, especially because, you know, he was a rock star in Japan. You know, he was one of the biggest names in Japan. He couldn't go anywhere without, you know, people swarming him. Kind of like the Michael Jackson of MMA in Japan, believe it or not. And we also have Guy Mesner coming on, which Guy Mesner, he started off, no, he's a fifth-degree black belt in karate. Actually, two styles. So one style, he's a fifth-degree black belt in karate. The other style, he's a second-degree black belt, and he's also a second-degree black belt in taekwondo. Started at age 14, and his first fight was in Pancras. Like Matt, and like common-day, modern-day mixed martial arts, that never fucking happens. Like, right. You have to go in the amateurs, you fight in the amateurs, and then you maybe land in a professional league. But his very first fight, Guy Mesner, he fought in Pancras, which is, you know, it's crazy enough. And he fought his very first fight. It was his very first win and fought in Japan. And I can't wait to talk to him all about it. And then he had a very good career up until 2003, won his last fight, retired, happy, healthy, and I'm glad for it. Guy Mesner, and also we have Josh Barnett, who is, and people don't talk about this enough, but Josh Barnett is also the youngest UFC champion, heavyweight champion in UFC history. He won the title at 24 years old. Matt, what were you doing at 24?
Not a lot.
Yeah. I can't remember because I was in college and drinking. So, like, you know.
Yeah, I might have been doing a little worse than that.
Exactly. So while we were dicking around, Josh Barnett was winning the UFC heavyweight championship, and he beat Rand Couture to do it. Absolutely insane. I mean, it's crazy to think about. And then
Randy who?
Wait, who?
Randy who?
Randy Couture, who actually gave me a birthday greeting, which I appreciate, Randy Couture. Thank you very much, sir. And he, Josh Barnett, which is interesting enough, he did the complete role reversal. Like, Guy Mesner started off at Pancras, Bas Rutten started off in Pancras. But Josh Barnett actually fought in the UFC. He fought in Super Bowl, fought in the UFC, and then he went to Japan, and he wrestled in New Japan Pro Wrestling, and then he also fought in Pancras. So I want to ask what the working relationship was between Pancras and New Japan Pro Wrestling. I'm very interested to find out about that.
You know, there might be a lot of people out here that don't even know what Pancras is.
Yeah, so Pancras, this was the promotion running in Japan while the UFC was, you know, it had its meteoric rise. Like, it was no holds barred, anything goes. Like, people said, like, it was hyped up, like, the only way to lose a fight was by submission, knockout, or death. Like, and of course, it caught flack with every single senator, including John McCain, which, believe it or not, John McCain is partially a reason why UFC is a sport it is today, because he's the one that wanted the sport to get sanctioned. But back in the day, Pancras was what was going on in Japan. It was the big thing in Japan. It was like a mixture, because New Japan Pro Wrestling, of course, had a huge following. Japanese love their pro wrestling. So naturally, Pancras was a mix of not only fighting, which, you know, they had palm strikes, you know, nothing crazy.
Right.
But it also had, you know, it had weird rules. Like, you can grab the ropes to get out of a submission. It had a standing 10 count. Not a lot of people know that, but it did have a standing 10 count. And, you know, the rules were so unique, and it was such a hybrid mix of both pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. So, you know, Pancras was the precursor of Pride Fighting Championships, which I alluded to earlier, because Takada was a huge pro wrestler in Japan, huge. And he blurred the lines between what is real and what is, like, you know, fiction. So right. they put up Takada versus Hicks and Gracie, which a Japanese pro wrestler versus Hicks and Gracie, a black belt in Gracie Jiu-Jitsu, seems like a fucking bad idea, but the Japanese ate it all up. And, you know, Pancras was just like the precursor to that, because it had the perfect mix of, you know, pro wrestling and MMA, and it caught an audience. And I think Pancras is the reason why Pride also caught an audience. But, you know, that's for debate. It's subjective because, again, you know, I'm not Gabe, who's, you know, he fought during that era.
Right.
To me, Pancras was the precursor to Pride and, you know, the good old days. So, you know, I love Pride. I love Pride. I love Pancras. And I love that the fact that they're going to be on Netflix. When, do you know when the documentary is airing?
I'm privy to some information. I'm not really sure because I'm being told around March, but that's just what I'm hearing. I don't quite know, but I know it is going to be a four-part, like, documentary series. Right. So I did get to see a little bit of things, and the cinematography looks really great. So I'm looking forward to it. I think it's going to be a really cool documentary.
And what I love most too is it's introducing a new audience, like an audience that never really discovered Pancras and only know mixed martial arts from what they see on Bellator and UFC and on UFC Fight Pass. You know, this is, we're talking the good old days, and, you know, some of the fights and some of the fighters that came out of that system may surprise you. You know, like I was mentioning on the podcast yesterday, and I brought up Josh Barnett, and one of my buddies was like, Josh Barnett fought in Pancras? What the fuck? Like, right. When did that happen? Like, a lot
way,
of
way long ago.
Yeah. Yeah. In a galaxy far away. And not a lot of people even knew that Clint Shamrock got his start in Pancras, you know, before, you know, he fought in the UFC and he also fought in Pancras. And he actually beat Boss Rutten in a hell of a war. You know, some of the greatest fights came out of Pancras, and I can't wait for, you know, people to watch that documentary and actually, you know, expose themselves to mixed martial arts. What's going on, brother? You missed nothing yet. We're waiting for our guests. Our technician is over in, where are they right now? What's happening with that panel?
They're in Burbank at the Hilton, and they are working on getting everybody set up to go. So we're just kind of biding time until that happens, since we promised we'd be going at 8. But
yeah.
But they'll punch in here very shortly, I'm assuming.
And that's all the way in California. Matt wanted me to fly down, and I'm like, ah, I don't know about that one.
Well, I was going to go, but 6 hours on a flight to LA, I'm not down with it.
Yeah.
If I had more time, I would have just driven down there, but that's a long travel. So
now, Matt, are you in Vegas or are you in?
I'm in Florida.
You're in Florida.
Huh. Yeah.
You want to drive down to California?
Why not? I got a new Gladiator. I could go for a road trip.
My man.
Yeah. So
I can't wait till the country opens up so we can fly down to Florida for Titan FC and fly down to California for great panels like this. I would have killed to be in front of Bass Rutten again and hear some of his stories again. And you know, he's a fucking savage, man. Yeah, he's one of those, like, if he grew up in the wrong era. Like, he was born when, like, the cavemen came up. Like, he would have made a survival of the fittest would have had shit on him. None of the cavemen would have had shit on him. I mean, he is the atypical fighter who, you know, one of the greatest of all time. And we also have Chris Lytle coming on. Chris Lytle, who also fought in the UFC, who I'm excited to talk to. I can't wait to share. Yes.
He's doing bare knuckle boxing right now, isn't he?
Yeah, yeah. And you know what? He, in his second professional fight, he fought in Pancras. And he fought against one of the gritty fucking veterans. He fought against – so this is how much of a savage Chris Lytle is. This fucking guy, he wins his first fight, his first pro fight, and then he gets called up to fight in Pancras. And the same guy I mentioned who went to war with Bass Rutten, that same veteran, very, very hard to pronounce his name, like – a very Japanese name, but he's one of the gritty, gritty fucking veterans. And in 1999, Chris Lytle, in his second professional fight, definitely inexperienced, fucking fights the same guy that Bass Rutten went to a draw with. I mean, you know, Chris Lytle is a beast. You know, it's yeah. You know, second professional fight, I don't know if I would fight in Pancras, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
But that's how different the eras were, you know, like they're it wasn't unheard of for your first professional fight to be in the UFC or to, you know, fight in like King of the Cage and any of these promotions that I wouldn't fucking dare step into. You know, it wasn't unheard of back in the day, of course. But now that the sport has evolved so much, you know, you got to cut your teeth in the amateurs before you go into the professionals. You'll get called to the professionals and hopefully maybe you'll land in a league like Titan FC or one of those leagues on UFC Fight Pass, and then finally get your call up to either Bellator or the UFC. But, you know, to fight in Pancras or King of the Cage or the UFC in your very first fight, you know, that's some CM Punk shit. We all saw what happened to him, you know what I'm saying?
Right. Yeah, so Mark Allen David saying that Jose Aldo, Joe Riggs, and Shel Shonan have a past Pancras too, just to name a few legends.
So. Yeah, Mark, good call, brother. Mark knows his shit, and I love it. Yeah, a lot of legends fought from Pancras, and you wouldn't even know that. That's why I'm so happy that they're making this documentary to show the audience how much talent really came out of Japan. It wasn't just Pancras, too. It was also Pride and, you know, Quentin Rampage Jackson. Chuck Liddell fought in Pride. You know, he fought against Guy Mesner, who Guy Mesner is going to be on the show. Vanderlei Silva, Anderson Silva. Anderson Silva, believe it or not,
who? Had a – Who's Anderson? What?
You don't know who Anderson Silva is? a guy who was like considered the Michael Jordan of mixed martial arts, and also danced with Justin Bieber. Remember that?
Oh, that guy. Okay, I got
you. Oh, that guy. That fellow. I heard he's a good egg. Yeah, I heard he's very good. But so, you know, Anderson Silva, too, he had a losing record in Japan. And then he was with Shootabox, and then he ended up fighting for a, I think it was called Cage Rage. He fought against Lightning. Damn, this guy, name slips right off my tongue, but this guy actually got arrested, and he pulled off some crazy crimes, but Anderson Silva beat this guy, and then he ended up in the UFC where he fought Chris Leben, which we talked about yesterday. But he had a losing record in Pride. He had a losing record in Japan when he was with Shootabox, and, you know, he was pretty much the you know, the backup singer to Wanderlei Silva when Wanderlei Silva was having his run. And so much talent came out of Japan. So much talent. You know, I'm so excited to talk about this. And
well, I think they're all trying to, like, you know, revive it. It's what it kind of sounds like. They're trying to breathe new life into this because, you know, for me, I'll be honest. Like, I really don't know much about and not privy to any of this older stuff, you know, past Ken Shamrock coming into all those things. I really don't know anything about the past.
Yeah. So. Yeah. And I love that they're trying to revive it, you know, and I hope it catches an audience because I think Ryzen has a great program. I think they have a great organization in Japan. My buddy Sheena Starr actually fought for Ryzen, and they have a very good organization. Biggest problem is you can bring in Floyd Mayweather even fought for Ryzen, but the biggest problem is after Pride, because Pride was the echelons. Pride was considered at one point in time better than the UFC, you know, as far as a presentation standpoint. And because they were so good at presentation, it made the fighters seem so fucking superhuman. So when they came over, like Shogun Rua was a Pride Grand Prix champion. When he came over and he fought Forrest Griffin, people were saying, oh shit, Forrest Griffin's going to die in this fight. People were actually saying that shit. Not even knowing Forrest Griffin's an animal, and I actually met Forrest Griffin, shout out to him, and interviewed him. But, like, you know, the presentation was so on point, and Pride was considered such a dominant program and such a dominant organization that every single fighter seemed superhuman. But after Pride went under because of different issues, whether it be the Yakuza clan or things we won't talk about, but tongue-in-cheek shit, you know, like, shit that you don't know that's kind of on the down low that's, like, only MMA, like, insiders know, but, like, after Pride shut down, I think Pride in one way or another, not Pride, but the Japanese MMA audience kind of drifted away a little bit, especially when Pride closed down. And they tried with Dream. They also tried with Dream to bring the Japanese MMA scene back up, but, you know, it was just not meant to be, unfortunately. So hopefully with this documentary, it'll show the beauty that is Japanese mixed martial arts. I only can hope so, you know?
Yeah, I'm hearing talks about Paris and couple other places, and then bringing some training facilities here to the U.S. That's just what I'm hearing, but
yeah.
I don't have any confirmation of any of it. It's just what I've been hearing about because of this summit thing that's going on.
Right, and they also had very good schools too, and it was like it caught such an eye of so many spectators of both. Imagine, because pro wrestling is very much a bit, like, I don't like MMA, and MMA people are like, oh, pro wrestling is fake and shit. But the reason why Pancras really caught an eye is because it was the perfect mixture of both. And also had elements of boxing too, like the standing 10 count. You know, it had something for everybody. And it also had, like, you don't realize this too, but Pride and Pancras had a lot of pro wrestlers cross over. Like Takada, we talk about Takada actually fighting in Pride, but we also had Bob the Beast Sapp, who trained at the WCW Power Plant. He also fought for Pride and then later K1. And Pancras, they had pro wrestlers galore, like Alexander the Butcher Otsuka, who, you know, he had a fight in a fight against Takada, which is obviously super staged and obviously very much a, you know, a staged MMA fight, but it was still entertaining nevertheless. You know, Alexander Otsuka, and they also had Giant Silva fight for Japanese organizations. He was a pro wrestler in WWE. He was with the Oddities in the WWE. And then they had, like, Jose Canseco fucking fought. What really? The fuck are you thinking? Like, bro, like, what is going on here? You know, like, they
That's
had
crazy. Pro wrestlers.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And they had a lot of pro wrestlers. So it was like the perfect mix. While nowadays, MMA kind of like shuns away from pro wrestling, and pro wrestling kind of shuns away from MMA. And, you know, I think they're both great, to be honest with you. But like, Pancras was the perfect mixture of both. And that's why they caught the eye of the Japanese audience. It was like the perfect intro for Pride, K1, and all these great Japanese promotions that actually come along. So I'm excited to talk more about it. I'm excited for a documentary about it. And hopefully it catches everybody's eye and people start buying into Pancras. I hope so.
I think that's what they're hoping too. So, I mean, it's a lot of money being put into it. So,
and I want to hear from like a business standpoint too. When I talked to Josh,
oh, me too.
So from a business standpoint, because Pancras never wanted to step on anybody's toes. Like, you never heard of Pancras being in competition with the UFC or Pride. You only heard about UFC and Pride and, you know, talent trading, and like UFC fighters would go over to Pride for that big, big payday, and Pride would like quasi send people, but not necessarily. Like, they sent Fujita, Kazuyuki Fujita, who was a protege of Antonio Inoki. Antonio Inoki is a Japanese pro wrestler that actually fought Muhammad Ali. Very interesting story. Not a great fight, but it was one of the first modern day MMA fights. And Inoki added eliminated 20 years off of Muhammad Ali's life with those leg kicks. And if you never saw the fight, YouTube it. It's worth maybe 2 minutes of watching, but, you know, it wasn't a great fight. But Inoki kicked the shit at Muhammad Ali's legs. But Antonio Inoki's protege, Kazuyuki Fujita, actually fought in Japan. He was supposed to be sent over to the UFC. Kazuyuki Sakuraba, they talked about, you know, those fights happening all the time. And, of course, the dream fight between Wanderlei Silva and Chuck Liddell, which was supposed to happen in Pride. They total elimination 2003, UFC sent over Chuck Liddell. And, of course, Chuck Liddell got eliminated by Quentin Rampage Jackson. But they kept Wanderlei Silva and Chuck Liddell far away from each other as far as humanly possible in the bracket. And, of course, you know, Quentin Rampage Jackson beat Chuck Liddell. And Wanderlei Silva beat Hideyoko Yoshida, who was a judo silver medalist or judo gold medalist in the 1992 Barcelona Games. I'm not really too sure. It fades me. But Wanderlei Silva ended up winning the tournament. There's so much talk. Who is better, UFC or Pride? And Pancras was never in discussion for some reason, which I never knew why Pancras didn't try to be competitive. You know, it was very weird to me, because Pancras had a very, very good product. You know, I have no idea. I couldn't even answer that question, to be honest with you. I hope they can. I hope Josh Burnett and Fast Rune, who were in the inner workings of Pancras, and, you know, obviously, you know, have been with some of the biggest promotions. Hopefully they can answer it.
I hope so.
Yeah, what questions should I ask my guests?
I'm messaging them, and they're saying they'll be on very shortly.
Perfect. Awesome.
So,
how's everybody's evening going? Yeah, I'll answer some questions while we're at it, me and Matt.
Well, David will answer some questions. I'll sit here and enjoy the show.
I think Matt's a great talker, and he doesn't give himself enough credit. He's as good as a talker. By the way, when we go backstage, him and I will talk all day. We'll talk for an hour, like, between him and I. He's as good of a talker as he is a producer.
Well, I can talk about certain things. I can talk about whiskey. I know a lot about whiskey. So, you know, get me on a topic of scotch. I can talk your ear off.
Oh yeah, your scotch and whiskey shelf completely on point.
Yeah, it's quite large collection. So.
Oh yeah, that's what she said, by the way. Oh, got him.
What's that?
I said that's what she said. You missed that.
I did. My bad.
You got it. You finally got it.
I did.
Yeah, but if you guys have any questions for when our tech guy plugs them in, and I'm going to be able to ask our panel of guests some questions. Obviously, you know, a lot of working is happening in California, so There's a bit of a delay. I do apologize about that. I'm going to try to keep you as entertained as humanly possible and try to keep you on the hook.
You know how Hollywood is.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Past Ruin was actually in Here Comes the Boom. He was in a couple TV shows too, right?
So what do you think? I heard that there's a possibility of a BMF fight coming up. Have you heard this?
Yeah, I heard.
What do you think about that?
I think it's a fucking dumb idea. You know, I think it's
When did the BMF thing even start?
So Satan came up from the bowels of hell. He said, "You know what? I'm gonna pollute this sport even more."
Right.
And the good folks at WMG, under the confines of a publicly traded company, all nodded their heads and said, "Yes, we can sell this. Let's just make a silver belt with BMF on it, and let's dilute the sport and make it seem fucking stupid as hell." I have some strong feelings about
it. When did that actually happen? I didn't notice that. Is that a brand new belt or what's going on?
No. It was supposed to be like a kind of like a tongue-in-cheek type thing because Jorge and Nate Diaz was like, "Well, let's fight for the badass motherfucker belt." So it was like tongue-in-cheek, kind of like a joke, which it all started as like kind of a tongue-in-cheek joke. But they decided to make it a fucking belt. The only good thing about that was The Rock walked out with the belt, which I thought was the coolest thing ever. Oh, dude, how badass was that, man? How awesome was that?
I like, you know, do the people's eyebrow.
Dude, I grew up with The Rock, okay? I grew up with The Rock. My niece is growing up with The Rock. She loves Moana. That's a great movie. Everyone's growing up with The Rock. The Rock's, he's the true BMF. You know what I'm saying?
Right. Yeah, you know, he's like one of the only people on Instagram I even follow.
Oh, yeah, dude.
Like, he seems like a cool guy.
Super cool guy. He's one of those guys I wish, you know, considered mixed martial arts back, like, you know, when he was done.
So do you have any interest in watching this fight if it happens with Connor and Jorge?
You know, like, it's interesting. It's sort of interesting. I mean, it's an intriguing fight. I don't think we need the bells and whistles. I don't think we need a BMF title to sell it. I think it sells itself. Conor McGregor, super fucking talented. One of the most innovative strikers I've ever seen. You know, and I say this, and to my dying breath, I say this, that Conor McGregor does not need any of the talking. He doesn't need any BMF title. He doesn't need any of the glitz and glamour or any type of the flair. You know, he doesn't need to flock up those pigeon feathers. You know, he's already a great fighter. He's already marketable just being himself. And Jorge Masvidal, he's the same way. Just a incredible striker, incredible fighter. I think this is one of those fights that he can sell.
And he apparently can take a toe kick like no other.
Yeah, dude. Oh, yeah. You saw that main event? What the fuck happened with that main event? What do you think about it?
It was fucking boring.
I don't think – I think to the untrained eye, it was boring. Okay.
It was not entertaining at all.
To the untrained eye and the inexperienced –
yes, it depends on how deep into MMA and, you know, fighting you are. Technically, you know, it was a good fight. They, you know, but it was not entertaining. Watching a man stomp on another guy's man's feet for how many, how was it, 25 minutes?
5, 10, 15, 20, 25. Yeah, 25 minutes.
Yeah, that's no fun to me.
I think Usman.
That's why I'm just a producer. I've never been in a sport. You know, I'm not like you guys. I haven't participated in any of this. It's just not fun for me. So.
And we have awesome conversations, and especially from a fan standpoint, you know, I love hearing from you, but. When it came to Usman, Usman had the perfect strategy fighting a guy that's coming in on 6 days' notice. Even though Masvidal was in training camp, it wasn't necessarily training camp. It was training to possibly fight somebody at some point in time. It wasn't hardcore training camp. And we talked to plenty of American Top Team fighters on the show. Usman had the perfect strategy to fight somebody that he's fighting on 6 days' notice. You're stopping on the field.
I chalk it up to being kind of like watching a Mayweather fight.
Oh yeah.
I can't stand to watch him fight, but you know, technically he's outperforms everybody. I mean, he's you're not Mayweather because you're, you know, you don't know what you're doing. But
yeah, exactly. But Usman had the perfect strategy. He was going to the body constantly with those shots, constantly going to the body. He was backing him up against the cage, pushing him against the cage, and making Masvidal carry his weight. And Usman, as a wrestler, you can make 155 pounds seem like 300 pounds. And, you know, he made Masvidal carry his weight. So he was just wearing down Masvidal round and round and round.
That was obvious.
It was the picture-perfect strategy. I mean, I couldn't have planned that strategy any better. I mean, he did things that I didn't even think of. I knew Usman was going to try to tire him out and go for those body shots. I did not expect toe stomps. I did not expect him to back him up against the cage as much as he did. Go for a takedown right off the gate. You know, Usman broke him down every single round and methodically broke him down. So to the untrained eye and to the casual fan, you say, oh, shit, this is fucking boring and sucks. But like to me, I'm like, oh my god, there's a master strategy, there's a master plan going on every single round. I thought it was a brilliant performance, to be honest with you. Do you think if UFC is dead, if Pancras never existed? Oh my god, that's a good question, Mark David. Great question, I love it. What do you think? From a fan standpoint,
UFC, do you think if UFC is dead, if Pancras? Well. I mean, you know, the UFC came from pancreas, kind of. Pancreas, you know, so it would have been a much tougher start for the UFC,
I believe. You know what? I think there was no social media. There was no websites. There was no – unless you really dug deep, and you did tape trading, or you bought magazines, mixed martial art magazines, and magazines like that was involved with martial arts. You really didn't know Pancras existed.
My bad.
You really had to educate yourself and dig deep to find that Pancras actually existed in Japan. So Pancras educate Japanese fans about the honor of the sport, the beauty of the sport. You know, Japanese fans traditionally are very, very quiet and very respectful during their fights. It's a completely different audience in the UFC that are drinking, yelling like, rip his dick off and kick him in the balls, put him in a body bag. It's a complete two different universes.
Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I don't think one had anything to do with the other. I don't think one would have attribute to one success or whatever, because they were in two different worlds and nobody knew about either. Or Japan didn't know about the UFC until UFC Japan, unless they did some digging. And Pancras never went over to America, and you know, few and far in between did seminars, but that's about it. Maybe, you know, Guy Mesner and like the American fighters that fought over there educated people about, hey, I'm going to be fighting for this promotion, come check it out.
I think a better question for Mark to be asking isn't whether if Pancras didn't exist, would the UFC exist? I think the better question would be if Pancras revitalized, could it take over some of the UFC market? I think it could. I personally like the entertainment value of Pancras way better than the UFC. That, you know, you can the whole, you know, like you said, it's kind of a cross between the wrestling and so the showmanship to me is better in Pancras. So
I don't think Pancras would take away an audience from the UFC. I think it would just, you know, it would be another form of entertainment for MMA fans to watch and watch consistently. Like, I watch Bellator, Ryzen, ONE, UFC. I'm not indifferent. I'm not biased towards any form of mixed martial arts. I'll watch every promotion if I could. I've watched Titan FC. I watch Pancras. I watch, you know, I used to watch Smack Girl back in the day when, you know, female MMA was non-existent and it only happened in Japan. By the way, Japan was the birthplace of real, real marketable MMA women fighters. I mean, Smackgirl, research it, do your research. Smackgirl was a great promotion for females MMA. I don't think, because Pride tried playing that game. Pride tried taking away a market from the UFC.
Right.
But they didn't really give it their all, because I still think, I still maintain to this day, the only reason Pride came over to the United States was to, you know, it was kind of like a, you know, a infomercial for come buy my promotion, because the Yakuza clan made us lose our TV deal and fucked us royally, and, you know, our promotion's dying, so we need an American person to go buy it. WWE was about to go buy it. Shane McMahon made an offer to buy Pride, but then Vince McMahon shot it down. Like, they actually had Pride fighters and Pride executives at WWE headquarters in Connecticut. So that's a little tidbit that not a lot of people know, but I got the inside scoop. So stick with me, kid. Anywho, so, like, I think if Pankhurst was really serious about coming to the United States, and if they really made a big effort, if they really said, hey, here's an alternative form of mixed martial arts, an alternative form of pro wrestling that you might not be privy to, if they really made a legitimate effort and they put their really invested in it, they would be able to. I would start off small, like I would start off at, you know, not big venues. I would try to take some, I would scout hardcore. Well,
that's really easy to do with the COVID.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Definitely.
It's not a bad time to start.
So. It's never a better time to start. All you have to do is get a streaming deal, like on Fight TV. Fight TV is a great, very, you know, very prominent place to start with streaming. So let's just start with Fight TV. Okay, now you got a revenue stream. People can buy your pay-per-view. People can see it. Pankhurst, to MMA fans, is a very marketable name still. To me, it's a very marketable name. With the Netflix documentary coming out, it's going to be even more marketable. Especially, you know, I watched Tiger King 20 times. If they put as much money into the documentary, it's going to get an audience. Definitely. Right. So if the documentary is as good as I think it's going to be, then they'll definitely have an audience that will want and crave more. Just like I want to see another episode of the Tiger King. You know what I'm saying? So, like, and I'm talking from a standpoint of the casual MMA viewer. So if you have this Netflix documentary and you have all this, you know, markability, and you already have a brand name that people know in the MMA community, you can catch and you also catch the true diehard MMA fans like myself, and, you know, you're going to hit on all cylinders. And market, maybe partner up with the WWE and get some WWE names in there. You know, I know some, you know, maybe Brock Lesnar can hop in. I mean, we can pay a Brock Lesnar some, you know, some pay-per-view money. Maybe we can get a prominent name to sell the main event, get a main event and get some talent in there, like, you know, not marquee talent, have a crazy main event with a marquee name, and then have lesser known talent stack the card. You'll have maybe one or two, three classic fights in a card that's full of maybe 15 fights, 10 fights. That's just the laws of probability. And then there you go. Boom. You got an audience in the United States. So you never know. I mean, they could definitely do it. Do some seminars too. What do you think?
I think if you fold some of the WWE guys in there, that you would definitely, I mean, sounds like a genius idea to me.
Yeah, yeah. And they had plenty of Japanese pro wrestlers in Pankhurst. So, you know, do the same formula. Bring in some WWE guys or AEW guys. You know, so, I know a couple of shooters.
So I did see Mark Allen, David, says the Usman performance was technically clinic. If you don't appreciate what Usman did for the five rounds, then you don't understand how the fight game works. So I take this kind of like I do when I – so you know, you guys are – you might be the professionals that do it. It's kind of like when I see somebody in – you know, I go watch a movie, and then you talk to somebody that makes movies, and they'll be like, that movie was crap. I'm like, well, I watched it for the entertainment value of it. You know, I wasn't looking for the most, you know – technically how this, you know, everything unfolded and, you know, you know, there's rules to movies that, you know, Hollywood or should I say students of film look at, and then they, you know, I would never go to a film school because it would ruin movies for me. So, right. So I take it kind of the same way with MMA. It's like, I go to it to see a good fight. Like, yeah, maybe that was technically perfect and not, you know, but I personally hate it when it goes to the judges. So,
right. Which, you know, it's, you share the same opinion as all MMA fighters, and, you know,
you should never let go to the judges, but
yeah. Except if you're like me that lays on your opponent for three rounds and just gets a decision because all you know is wrestling. I mean, you know, I loved it. I love judges, you know what I'm saying? But like, that's what I'm talking back in the day with smoker fights.
And everything. Well, I mean, I love seeing a submission. Like, you know, it doesn't have to be a knockout. A submission works for me too, but yeah, like,
right.
Just laying on somebody or, you know, working their toes.
Yeah. But so I care about your opinion. So I care about the casual MMA fan, their opinion, as much as I care about my, you know, my MMA brothers and sisters. The reason being is because the casual MMA fan, we need those fans. We need to keep building up our audience so more people invest more money in the sport, so fighters get paid more and everybody wins. We can ramp up value. Like, if someone illegally streams an event, I lose my fucking mind. I say, bro, take down the stream or I'm going to fucking kill you. Like, I lose my shit because I want money to be invested in the sport because my friends are getting paid. More casual viewers watch the sport. My friends get paid more money. So, like, I want casual MMA viewers to say that main event was absolutely insane. That main event was beautiful. That's why, like, when everyone jumps on the Conor McGregor bandwagon, I don't hate, because I want people, I want the casual eyeballs to see the sport for what it is. And I have 1,000 people that watch a Conor McGregor fight. You'll maybe get 500 or 1,000, maybe 1%, 10% that will continuously watch MMA and see the sport for what it is. Maybe go to a gym. Maybe go to my gym and spend some money on mixed martial art, like martial art lessons, and like, you know, like,
well, the good thing about, you know, these you know, you got five cards for USC 251, so he stacks the cards up pretty good. So even if the main card, you know, doesn't rile the fans up, there were plenty of good fights that, you know, that happened during the during the entire event. I mean, you look at
I was about to say that.
Thug Rose.
Oh my goodness, dude.
So Thug, I know, Rose. I know you interviewed her at one point, and I would certainly like to have her back on.
Yeah. So Thug Rose and Pat Barry were both on my podcast, and they were at like a Denny's, and they were doing my podcast, which Thug Rose, coolest lady on the planet Earth. And there's like, I have a list of maybe like 20 fighters that I will watch.
So you were at Denny's with both these?
No. I was in my apartment, and I was with we had four other hosts, and everybody's excited to interview Thug Rose, and we talked to her. If anybody lived up to my every expectation as a person, as a fighter, it's Thug Rose Namajunas. And that was a big fight, you know. A lot of people were doubting Thug Rose Namajunas. A lot of people thought that she was not going to be able to pull it out. First round, great round for Thug Rose. She's picking her shots. She's using that jab. She's putting it in her face, circling, using angles. You know, Andrea kept putting her hands down, using that head movement. But if you're bobbing like this, it's like Mike Tyson's punch out. The law of Mike Tyson's punch out. You're going to get that timing down, and you're going to figure out patterns, and you're going to be able to hit. And right, Thug Rose found out that fucking pattern right away. First round, second round, boom, boom, just for Thug Rose. Got really scary in the third round. Third round got super fucking scary. Like, I'm talking about horror film, Blair Witch Project, fucking scary. And, you know, Thug Rose got taken down, and, like, Thug Rose got hit pretty hard, and her eye was busted, her nose was busted. Thug Rose still kept in the game, kept fighting, kept battling it out, and got the decision. It was a crazy, crazy fight. If I would show any women's MMA fight to anybody, this would be the fight, because Thug Rose really showed her grit, her determination, and hopefully we get to get her on the show, because I'd love to talk to her again about her absolutely incredible career.
Yeah, I think it's one of the best fights of the evening for sure.
Best fight of the evening. Best fight. Besides Jose Aldo and his heroics.
Oh. Yeah, I was worried there at the end for Jose, because I felt like they should have stopped the fight earlier.
You know, he went out on his fucking shield like the true warrior he is.
You could see, you know, he would just do enough movement just to keep in the game. But how much is that? It was just at that point, like muscle memory.
Yeah.
You know,
and I always say it to my dying breath that when he fought Conor McGregor, when Conor McGregor knocked him out, Jose Aldo's aura of invincibility in his own mind and to the crowd's mind went right out the window. Because Jose Aldo, you know, he took a lot of chances, especially in some of his fights, especially with Chad Mendes and Frankie Edgar, because a lot of people had that fear. He instilled fear in a lot of people. He had a great undefeated streak. But Conor McGregor showed, not just to the crowd, because who gives a shit about the audience that are watching when you're in the cage, but showed to Jose Aldo that Jose Aldo can be beaten. I think after that fight, it was just kind of a he had one glimpse. He had glimpses of hope of going back to original form. But I think that fight did something to him that very few fighters are able to rally from, you know, and Conor McGregor got into his head, tortured him through every single press conference, and then beating him under 30 seconds. I mean, that did something to Jose Aldo that it broke him. It broke the unbreakable. And I'll give Conor McGregor a lot of credit for that, because he broke Jose Aldo and it carried on for the rest of his career. What do you think?
Yeah, I can't believe I mean when it happened, I mean it was like just so quick. And you know, up to that point I thought Aldo was actually gonna, and who knows if that punch wasn't thrown, who knows what would have actually happened in that match anyway.
Conor McGregor was backstage drilling that punch over and over and over again. They had Jose Aldo's number, and they had him scouted so well. They knew, they knew the chances that Jose Aldo takes. But so many fighters are so intimidated of Jose Aldo that they never capitalize on. He absolutely dropped his hand when he goes for his best Sunday punch, and he got clocked. He got clean clocked. And, you know, Conor McGregor was the first person with the balls, the Irish balls, the big Irish balls, laddie, to actually take that chance.
Right. All right.
Crazy.
I agree.
Unfucking believable. But I think, do you think Jose Aldo retires after this?
I don't think so. I think he'll stay in. Title fights will be off for a while, but
yeah, but does he have the legacy? Like, and this is my question, this is my biggest worry, is will people remember Jose Aldo as the great fighter that he is? Because Anderson Silva can lose a million fights. I will always see Anderson Silva as the Michael Jordan of mixed martial arts. Anderson Silva is above and beyond winning or losing. No one gives a shit. I saw him fight Daniel Cormier. I knew he was going to lose that fight. And I said, don't care. It's still Anderson Silva. Jose Aldo, I think he's still trying to capture that moment of glory, but I don't want him to damage his legacy even further in the process, because I don't think the casual viewer is going to remember Jose Aldo. They're going to revere Anderson Silva. They revere Anderson Silva like one of the biggest legends and one of the greatest of all time. They're not going to put Jose Aldo in that category, because the casual MMA viewer is always going to remember him as that guy that got knocked out within 30 seconds. You know what I'm saying? So, like, maybe Jose Aldo is trying to correct some things, but I don't want him to damage himself even further in the process, you know?
Right. I think what we're going to do is we're going to take a quick break, and I'm going to find out where these guys are at. And then when we find out, we will come back on live with them. So, I don't know what's happened. Maybe there's been a raid at the summit or something, because I can't get a hold of anybody right now.
All right, fair enough. Good.
So we're going to take a recess, and then we'll come back on as soon as we have a an answer. What's going
on? Perfect.
All right.
Hi, I'm Matt Seibel, producer of the Fight Mixer Show. We have a good lineup of guests coming up next week. Take a look for yourself.
What's going on, fight fans? This is El Bandido of Leon Brito getting some work done out here on the field. Check out my interview with Fight Mixer on the 23rd. We're going to be talking about my upcoming BKFC fight on the 26th. It's coming up real soon, guys. I will see you there.
Hey, what's up, guys? It's your boy, Eric Anders, and I can't wait to join all you fight fans on the Fight Mixer podcast.